Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
My very special guest tonight has had a rich and varied life and is one of the most recognisable and especially loved people on Australian television. She's been an assistant to a geophysicist in Libya, a cook in a sailing school, an air hostess for British Airways, a Lyft driver, nurse, sandwich maker and Senior Australian of the Year in 2010. She's chuckling in the background. She's part of the most remarkable wave of passionate foodies delighting us on television and in their countless numbers of books. Maggie Beer, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Lee. What an introduction.
It's lovely to have you with us. I don't think there's ever been a time like this when food has been so out there in the media with all the books, your own Cook and the Chef program, to say nothing of the MasterChef franchise. You must love seeing all this unfold.
Yes, when I think back to when I got started in food in a professional way, which was very non-professionally, back in the 70s, the late 70s, I mean, we were sort of out on a limb and people thought we were crazy. And so what has happened in that 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, but really the last four or five has just been exponential. And I love it. You're
right. And a whirlwind for you, personally.
Oh, a whirlwind for me. Yes, how I ever did 4 years of 40 weeks a year with the ABC, which I love, who I love, whom I love, I just don't know. But it was a great springboard for, you know, having an audience of people who loved what you did and you took them along with you.
Yes.
And, of course, then the bigger shows like MasterChef are doing just that.
Yes.
And others.
What do you say it is about food that so brings people together, the kind of preparation, sharing, gatherings around food? We spoke on our program a few weeks ago about traditions of food, the power of food, even going back to biblical times, Jesus and the early church communities gathered around food. What is it about it?
Oh, it's about love.
Yes.
You know, it's about sharing. It's about caring about the people around your table. And one of the easiest ways to express that love, if you like, is to cook for people, but cook beautiful, simple food. You know, not food because you have to, but food because you want to. And so the smells are evocative and just the pleasure and the discussion and around the table. You know, people talk around food.
And against the pace of today, it's slower than a lot of stuff today.
It is slower just by, slow food means many, many things. And just being around the table, no one's rushing to wash up, are they? It's not in my household anyhow. But it's where you exchange not only the day but ideas, and there's a very active table in the beer household. There are lots of disagreements.
Yes, I bet. Can I take you back to your earliest memories of food? It played a very important part in your family, didn't it?
Oh, extremely. I can't ever remember not having beautiful food every day of my life. My parents were so passionate about food when, you know, that word was never used in terms with food. But there was such an entrenched interest and knowledge and sharing of that knowledge. And so even times when, you know, we went through huge financial hardships and good times, bad times, good times, you know, in cycles, because they were small business people. And the quality of the food on the plate never, ever changed. It wasn't sophisticated. It was very real and close to the earth and the sea.
Yeah. I ran through a brief, eclectic mix of the things that you've done in your life, which are amazing in themselves. How have those things shaped you, do you think?
You know, when I think of all the things that I've done, all the jobs that I had before I found what it was by sheer chance what I wanted to do in life, it's like this big jigsaw. My brain and all our lives are like jigsaws, and pieces come into place that affect another piece, sometimes without you knowing it. And it's only when you step back later and realise, you know, when I was in Libya, I learned a lot about food of that region, and I lived right through Europe. It was just a very, I mean, I wasn't chasing food. I wasn't food interested in a way that I might be now when I'm travelling, but I was being, I was absorbing it all the time. And they, those threads come together. It can't help but.
You say you've learned to cook by osmosis and instinct more than a formal education, which is why you're the cook rather than the chef.
That's right.
How did that happen and how did it develop?
Well, how did it happen? I was never taught to cook anything, but I always helped in the kitchen, as my brothers didn't, by the way, in those days, you know, men, girls
Side
and boys.
Times.
Yeah, girls and boys were kept quite separately in their jobs, and mine was in the kitchen. But I loved the whole thing of cooking. I loved the smells. And by the age of seven, I was cooking. And it's instinct is there in many of us, right? So many of us have it, but often the door isn't open to it, and so we don't take notice of it. But I did, because I never thought not to, and because food was important, and that's all I needed.
I read one account of a journalist for whom you cooked, and he said she can draw flavours out of some ingredients that other people can't. Have you got a form of words to explain? How do you do that?
He must have been drinking. Was it a he? I must have primed him.
It is journalists as well.
Well, see, the thing is, I have confidence that food should be the simple flavours it's meant to be. And because of, you know, no training, and because I use flavour as my utmost decider, I'm into bold flavours, but pure flavours. I'm not frightened of flavour. Yeah. And I'm not frightened to do very little to food.
I'm always fascinated by food traditions in families.
Yeah.
Can you tell us some of yours, either in your young life or in your family more lately?
Well, it started in my young life. The food tradition that I first think of is that always celebrations were feasts, not, you know, individually plated. It was a feast on the table, and there were often ring-ins, people outside the family that my father would have, or mother would have collected along the way. And, you know, there were hams, and there were poultry and goose always at Christmas. And so I have this enduring memory of, even as a child, you know, five, six, seven, of these feasts and various people, you know, just helping themselves. And I remember, you know, we hardly ever had dessert in our life, very, very rare. But at feast times we did, and at Christmas time we were actually allowed one little bottle of Coke each. That was our big celebration. But that tradition has continued on with my family.
Sure.
And my daughters continue it on. You know, it is inculcated in our DNA, feasting and sharing. Yeah.
We're with the delightful Maggie Beer on Open House tonight. Maggie, one of your great passions, I think even hobby horses, as Senior Australian of the Year last year, is the quality of food in the aged care sector. And especially with those demanding spoilt baby boomers coming through, it's quite a big issue for you, isn't it?
It is. And can I say, I'm not worried about the baby boomers, because they're going to make themselves heard.
Yes.
And they're not going to accept what is there today in many places. And there are wonderful exceptions, you must know, Lee.
Yes.
But in the main, we have these people trapped and lost, who in aged care, who have never been verbal about their needs and have great acceptance of their lot, but to finish their life where they can't have the joy of beautiful food every day is to diminish their life. And it's not acceptable. You know, you and I wouldn't have much of the food that is served up. And we have to change a culture. We have to change it from the top. And we have to change every part of the chain.
And perhaps how older citizens are viewed, that it won't really matter to them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how How disgraceful is that, really? And if any individual were asked about their own mother and father, they would never accept that. So why do we accept it on a broader, you know, in a broader field? We must look at. They have worked hard. They have given the children and grandchildren so much just in going through life as they have. It's now our turn to look after them.
What are some of the bad consequences and the good benefits, do you think, in providing decent food, even the joy of food, in aged care?
Well, there's a lot of work that's being done. As the senior old girl of Australia last year, I got to do a lot of work with Pat McGorry and Ronnie Khan, who was the local hero, OzHarvest. And we talked a lot together about the benefits of food are more than just that satiating a need for fuel. It actually has impact on mental health, or just sheer depression. I mean, you give beautiful food to people in lovely circumstances. How can they feel down? There is a lot of science now that is connecting these issues, and so it should. We've always known it. Good food shared has to make a good life.
What are some of the good things that some of the better aged care facilities are doing to just lift their game?
Well, what they're doing, and I've been visiting some, what they're doing is treating their residents as people they want to please and make happy. And so they are passionate about food themselves and they want to share this. That's all that it takes. Oh, plus budgets.
Yes, of course.
And safety and budgets. Safety we must have, budgets we have to have, but we can expand. But really, truly, it's about the way that the individual group feels about what they're doing. If you have someone who wants to give good food, they will, and the benefits are just amazing.
And building things like produce gardens and allowing the residents to help.
That's exactly right. Having a garden, allowing them to grow things, and heavens knows, you know, so many of them have grown vegetables all their life and they're missing that activity. And the pride that you have as a guy. I came to gardening late in life, but my gosh, I think I've, you know, wowee, I'm amazing when I get beautiful tomatoes, yeah. Beautiful eggplant. All of those things become personal triumphs, and they're missing out on them if they don't have that chance.
How much better it would be for them to receive that?
And food straight from the garden. I have this huge vegetable garden at home, denying the fact that it's only Colin and I home now, because that flavour of food taken straight from the garden is like nothing else. And if only...
Yes, one of your favourite dishes I know is just a tomato full of flavour.
A tomato full of flavour and really great sourdough bread, some crushed extra virgin olive oil, tomatoes squashed down on it, some Australian pepper, some good Murray Valley salt, and you've got, you know, it's just scrumptious.
I'm salivating already.
In the right season.
Yes, that's right.
And
of course,
it's not winter.
Yes. And it's not made for transport.
It's not made for transporting because the tomato with really ripe flavour has got a very thin skin.
Can I ask you about the term good food life, which you're passionate about? What constitutes that, and why do you think it's important?
Okay, a good food life is what everyone deserves. And a good food life means, firstly, you care about the land, you care about the environment, you understand seasons, you understand you have to look after the land for it to keep on looking after you. In becoming aware of seasons, you become aware of flavour like tenfold because you're having food and fruit and vegetables at their peak time of ripeness. Then there's the empowering people to cook and that leads them into the joy of cooking and also looking after themselves and sharing the table. So you see, it's just everything.
In your very busy life, Do you have room for other passions apart from food?
Oh, yes.
Why am I not surprised at that?
Of course I do. Music's my great joy. all my life. I came from a very musical family, and there's always music. I have a group, and we sing every Wednesday night at my place, about 17 of us. And the joy of that. You know, you can be so exhausted and you have an hour and a half of singing with a group of friends where you're, you know, it lifts the roof in terms of the energy that it gives you and that collective thing.
Do you perform?
We perform for local things. We're truly serious about it. We have a great teacher, you know, where we go from jazz to opera. Yeah, and a cappella in between. And
rich,
yeah.
Wonderful life.
Yes.
A couple of specific food questions to end off. Guiltiest food pleasure.
Sorry.
<That's okay. laughs>
Well, the one that I hear we share.
Yeah, it's partly the reason I ask. We do share this, but I'll let you explain it because I'll be more embarrassed.
Okay. For me, firstly, in our family, you have to have a well-brought-up chook on the table.
Yes.
And a roast chook is a beautiful thing when it is, you know, flavour like from my childhood. But the very best of it is the carcass.
I agree.
When it's juicy, and my family are always horrified because I'll even eat it in restaurants. And you suck the bones and you take the Pope's nose or Parson's nose, depending where you come from.
Yeah.
You take the livers out of the little cavities, and it's beautiful.
One of your children didn't know of the Parson's nose or the Pope's nose until she left home because her mother nicked it.
As my mother did before me. So it has been, and now my children do the same.
I have some very dear friends. It's the first time I've publicly confessed this, who freeze their chicken carcass and hand it on to me when next they see me. How tragic is that?
Oh, well, if it's been frozen, what you need to do
is pour
it out and get your barbecue going, drizzle it with extra virgin olive oil and put it on to caramelise on the barbecue and drizzle it with a bit of verjuice, okay?
I'm overwhelmed. I'll do it tonight, tomorrow. Favourite food or favourite recipe? We've been through the tomato thing already.
Okay, well, the favourite recipe, there's no such thing because it is ever changing. But I'm often asked this, and I really do, I haven't yet found a food I love more than the fattest, most golden sea urchin that you could ever find, uni in Japan. And it is, to me, it is full of iron and buttery sweetness, and it is a food like no other.
Wow.
Yes.
Where did you first come across that?
I first came across it in Paris, travelling with Stephanie Alexander, and we had this beautiful sea urchin custard with sea urchin on top, and I thought, wow. But then my first trip to Japan, and the first night we arrived, my friend Toshio Yasuma took us to a sushi bar, and I had the biggest, fattest sea urchin ever you could imagine that I've ever had since.
Yeah.
And then totally unadulterated, and that's when I just flipped. And I've been searching sea urchins ever since.
Wow.
And we have them in South Australia.
I'll remember that. Most memorable meal, what would you say?
Oh, gosh. there's actually been so many.
Yes.
So many. It has to be one of the most memorable meals, was in the Barossa many, many years ago, and it was a friend who cooked wild duck with a liver panade inside, and it was pot roasted, adding some beautiful old yulamba something. I don't even know what it was. But it was one of those most perfect, and the duck was caught in season, you know, please.
Yes.
But it was one of the most memorable meals ever. It was just perfection, and of course, around the table with great friends. And you see, it doesn't have to be, great meals don't have to be complex. And
Or expensive.
Or expensive, yeah. Wild is free.
Thank you, Vera. It's been an absolute treat, and I'm hardly surprised to meet you and talk with you on Open House tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lee. I'm glad we share that.
It's our little secret.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.